This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast number 187 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the Office of Campaign and Political Finance presentation and discussion during the town council meeting held on Wednesday, December 11, 2019. The presentation document will be shared as soon as it is available. My notes and a few pictures from the presentation are available, and the link is provided in the show notes. The meeting runs about 50 minutes with the Q&A along the way. So without further ado, here's the recording of the Office of Campaign and Political Finance presentation and discussion.
Good evening. Tonight being 7 o'clock, I call the December 11th, 2019 meeting of the Franklin Town Council to order. Please pause for a moment of silence. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This meeting is being recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. And this meeting may be recorded by others. Tonight's meeting, it's a single item on the agenda, presentation, discussion, and we're fortunate enough tonight to have an individual from the State Office of Campaign and Political Finance. And ask, please come forward. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, Jamie, would you like to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say really quickly, this is a unique evening. It's almost a professional development training opportunity in some ways. I don't think in certainly my tenure we've ever had OCPF come out. There's been a lot of community conversation around some issues. In our view, along with the superintendent, you know, it's kind of in some ways better to be safe than sorry. And it was an opportune time right after the election to be able to have Jason Tate from the Office of Campaign and Political Finance come out and give a short presentation to the community and all of us, and an opportunity for us to ask questions. I know the community itself has had many questions. I think he's provided everybody a great flyer here. I'm sure in his presentation he'll go through other resources, but. I just want to appreciate and thank Jason for coming out tonight and being here in Franklin to offer us this opportunity.
All right. Jason.
All right. Thank you for having me. At OCPF, the Campaign Finance Office, we do about 60 of these 60 to 70 training seminars a year. We travel out to different towns and things. And there are two of us who do it, myself and then the director of the agency. He likes to get out every once in a while and do these and talk about the law, except he never does these ones. Whenever there's a ballot question seminar that comes up, he's like, Jason, that one is yours. And the reason why is when you're dealing with candidates, it's black and white with the campaign finance law. There are things you can do, things you can't do. When it comes to ballot question elections and the campaign finance law, there are a lot of gray areas, and we're gonna get into those. And the reason why we don't really The reason why he may not want to do that, I mean, I'm joking a little bit, but it's because it causes the most frustration. Many of you in the room, if you're involved with the police department, the school department, the fire department, the libraries, people who need overrides or ballot questions to build your buildings or maintain your budget, and you're an appointed public employee, your hands are tied. You feel like it anyway, that your hands are tied and there's not a lot that you can do. So we're going to go through this slideshow today. It'll take about 30 minutes. But if questions come up, feel free to throw them my way, because if you have a question, I'm sure other people do as well. And actually, it's more fun when there's a little bit of back and forth. So please feel free to hit me with those questions. If that question is going to be answered at a later time in this presentation, I'll just ask you to hold and we'll just move on, okay? So just to start, what is OCPF? Who are we? We're a very small state agency on Beacon Hill. We're not in the State House. They have us in that 21-story building to the right there. It's called One Ashburton Place. I used to be in the Army. The inside of an Army barracks looks better than the inside of that place. It is pretty plain, but that's where we do our work. We're on the fourth floor. There are 16 of us there. And our primary focus is disclosure. We have candidates out there from the statewide level, state reps, state senators. We have county candidates. About 250 political action committees are organized in Massachusetts. By the way, they can all give you each $500. We have super PACs. You've probably all heard of the super PACs. We have about 20 of those. About 1,000 local party committees, like the Franklin Republicans or the Franklin Democrats. We also have all mayors in the state and city councilors in cities of 65,000 or more. All of these different entities are filing with us. Meanwhile, on the municipal level in towns, for the most part, you have school committee members, selectmen, councilors, that sort of thing, that are filing locally. Our reports, our umbrella, you know, we administer that portion of the law, but you're filing it locally with your town clerk downstairs. So all of these different reports are coming in. Our primary job is to help you file those reports. We take 50, 60 calls every day, many dozens of emails with questions as simple as, you know, what's the limit per year that a contributor can give to me? All the way to complex questions about independent expenditures and electioneering communications and things like that. So bottom line, no matter what I talk about today, the bottom line is you can always call us or email us on this blue sheet at the very bottom. My email's there as well as the general counsel. It's always good to email. You know, if you don't mind your email becoming public at some point, if there's a public request. But it's always good to email, because that way we reply by email and you have it there in black and white. So if anyone ever questions what you're doing, you can just say, hey, I emailed OCPF. Another reason why Mike Sullivan, my boss, doesn't sometimes like doing these seminars is because a lot of what I'm going to talk to you about today, we're also going to ask you to call the Ethics Commission. Just know that a lot of times it can get frustrating for you. When we give you advice on the phone, we're going to say, you know, please also email or call the Ethics Commission, because they may have something to say on it. So our job is to help you with the rules for campaign finance. When I first started after college, I was a newspaper reporter, and I worked at papers in Michigan, Illinois, and then in Massachusetts, which is what brought me out here. And if you know anything about newspapers, that sort of gotcha story that you get where maybe a municipal or a state official messes up, that's probably going to get you on the front page above the fold. So I had this mentality over years of working in newspapers of, you know, sort of that gotcha story. Like, oh, someone made a mistake, you know, we're going to put you on the front page and get you. Well, when Mike Sullivan hired me at OCPF, I came in and we go through this training program and I start learning all the rules about campaign finance. And I start looking at the reports and I'll see mistakes in there. And the reporter maybe mentality sort of kicked in, and I'd print it off, and I'd sprint down to Mike's office, and I'd say, hey, Mike, look, someone made a mistake. Are we going to get him? And he'd say, you know, calm down. This ain't homicide here, okay? We're an office where we really are trying to help. And it's been true. You know, for the 11 years I've been there, our primary focus is taking calls and helping candidates and different committees, like ballot question committees, to raise money properly, spend it properly, and then put that information in a report for the public to see. My boss, I'd like to mention real quick, is appointed in a very unique way. The head of the state Republican Party, the head of the state Democratic Party, the Secretary of State, it's been Galvin for years, and a law school dean appointed by the governor. Those four people get together every 6 years, they hire a director, they appoint him or her, and they say, see you later. And they go about their business, and the director can run our office for 6 years as an independent agency. And then in 6 years, they can reappoint that person or go with somebody new. Mike Sullivan's been there since 1994, and he retires on the 27th of this month. So we're gonna have a new boss here pretty soon. But I mention that just to show that that our office really is nonpartisan. It really comes down to the Democrats and the Republicans agreeing on someone to come in and run the campaign finance law. If you've seen the headlines about the Federal Election Commission, which is the OCPF for the feds, they're dysfunctional because they have six commissioners and only half of the commission is full and they can't get anything done. One last comment about the others in our office. We have an audit team. You hear auditor, that sounds bad, but they really are the backbone of the agency, and they really help candidates and committees to properly raise, spend money, and file their reports. We have our legal team, and you can call them, email them for advice. If they email or call you, it's probably not good. I mean, someone probably either dropped the dime on you, or they filed a complaint, and our lawyers have to resolve that case. At the end of this thing, we'll talk about how we resolve cases. And then I'm the communications guy, so I do our website and our Twitter, our YouTube, and that sort of thing. I'm also the media spokesman. I don't know what the newspaper is in this area, but if anyone ever calls me about a Franklin issue, well, I'll never speak directly about what's happening in Franklin. Like, oh, that committee, they're in trouble. That candidate, you know, we're going to get them. I'll just speak in general. It's really an easy job because I can just say, hey, this is the law. Good luck with your story. So that part of my job is pretty easy. So that's OCPF. Why are we here today? We're here today to talk about ballot question elections in general. I mean, if you have candidate questions, throw them my way. But as part of the sort of ballot question conversation, we definitely need to talk about public employees and public buildings and fundraising. About 99% of our work at OCPF is the disclosure. Money raised, money spent, the public needs to see it. But our legal team gets caught up in these issues all the time. And you'll see why as we move along here, because it's easy to trip up on these rules. So we'll talk about this first. And this has to do with ballot questions as well as candidate elections. It doesn't matter, it's any election purpose. So public employees, who are they? It's anyone who's appointed and compensated. So you're talking about myself, I'm a state employee, so I'm considered a public employee under the campaign finance law. You're talking about people who work for UMass, municipal employees, teachers, firefighters, police officers, people who work for the corrections department, the public library. These are all public employees, and they have to stay away from the money. They're prohibited 24/7 nationwide from soliciting or receiving campaign contributions directly or indirectly. So we'll get into that, into what that means a little more in a few more slides. 24/7 means all the time, even on the weekends, when you're off the clock, appointed public employees cannot solicit or receive campaign contributions nationwide. Probably doesn't happen here in Franklin a lot, but I get this call. I'll probably especially get it early next year with the presidential primary happening. You know, hey Jason, you know, I'm a school teacher in Haverhill. I'm a real big supporter of Liz Warren. I've been asked to sell 10 tickets to her upcoming fundraiser up here in New Hampshire. Can I do that? No, you're a school teacher in New Hampshire. You're never allowed to solicit or receive campaign contributions for any political purpose. So those are the parameters. So what does it actually mean? The receipt of contributions, the law says no receipt, no receiving contributions, no soliciting. The receipt of contributions, that's a physical receipt of campaign contributions, actually taking money. We had a case once on the South Shore, a council candidate had an event at a restaurant. And if you've ever been to a campaign finance event, you know that you need to get the name and address of every donor, from $1 up to $1,000 for candidates, and it's unlimited for ballot questions. But you need to get the name and address of everybody. Occupation and employer, if it's 200 or more. So sometimes these lines get long at these events. People are taking checks, taking down information. At this event, it was getting very long. And the candidate was like, we've got to get this party started. Went up to his wife and he said, hey, can you please sit down at the table and start to take some of these checks? We need to get this party started. She wants to help. She sits down, she starts taking checks. Someone at the event saw her doing it, and they thought it was a good opportunity to nail this campaign. So they complained to OCPF. His wife worked two towns over for the DPW part-time. Our general counsel, though, looked at that and said, that's a violation of the campaign finance law. That's a public employee receiving campaign checks for elective purposes. How do we resolve it? I believe a $1,000 penalty was paid for that particular case. But it's a case-by-case basis. There's a wide range of resolutions for each case. So that's the receipt of contributions. We don't see a lot of these. Where do we usually get these public employee violations? It's with solicitations. Imagine they want to build a new school here in Franklin. To build a new school, you need approval from the taxpayers to get that override, that debt exclusion. And so a ballot question committee is formed, and they're going to meet every Wednesday night in someone's kitchen. It's a huge kitchen. Everyone meets there. Sometimes they're putting together signs, they're stuffing envelopes, they're doing other things on social media. Well, on this night, the person who's running the ballot question committee looks at the list for the upcoming fundraiser. It's a $25 a night pancake supper. And she notices that, hey, half of the people on this list, this invitation list, haven't even RSVP'd. Everybody, grab your cell phones. We're going to call the other half of this list, make sure they show up to the fundraiser. Well, the DPW worker over here who's helping out, he's going to have to say, sorry, can't help you tonight. I'm a DPW worker. I can't make fundraising phone calls. Those are the sorts of things that our attorneys have to look at from time to time. Social media, this is sort of ground zero right now for public employee violations. You can just imagine, everything I talk about involving public employees involves ballot question committees, local party committees, candidates. You can just imagine, let's say a local school teacher here in Franklin. It's the weekend, maybe he's watching the Patriots game and he opens up his private laptop, calls up his private Facebook page and says, hey, my good friend is running for town council. His parents are having a last minute fundraiser for him Friday night, $25 a head. Music, beer, I hope to see you all there. Post that to Facebook. Someone sees that and for whatever reason they don't like this candidate, copy, paste, put it in an email, zip it off to OCPF. Our general counsel is going to say, violation, it's a public employee who's soliciting contributions via social media. Just a little aside, I don't know if any of you have read the newspapers lately, but the campaign finance law just changed. So people like your governor and other statewide candidates, mayors in big cities, county candidates, DAs, those sorts of people, they're in what's called the depository system. Well, the law changed to move all of your House and Senate candidates into the depository system, as well as all mayors. As part of that bill, there's a little section in the law that says that OCPF can write regulations concerning the use of social media and public employees. So we haven't written those regulations yet, but we're going to. So keep your eyes open for those stories that come out. We have a quarterly newsletter where we address these sorts of things. If you already get it, great. If you want to get it, you can send me an email. I'm Jason Tate. I'm on the back of this blue flyer, and I'll add you to our newsletter list. So that's social media. How about when it comes time to invite people to your fundraiser? You have a ballot question. It's the Vote Yes Ballot Question Committee. And you decide that you're going to blast out an e-vite. You have a list of 2,000 people that you can just blast out an email to, inviting them to an event. The Vote Yes Committee invites you to a night of music. The youth choir is going to sing contemporary hits. The mayor will be there with the superintendent. Dessert, concert, corporate CTO will be there with the police chief. Tickets are $20. These e-vites get forwarded to our office from time to time, and our alarms are going off if we see this. I don't know, can any of you see why that would be? The red flags are flying. This is a fundraiser, and at least two appointed public employees are listed as draws for the event, the superintendent and the police chief. We'd say, this is an illegal fundraiser, don't have it. Then they say, you know what? We've already had it. We'd say, and we don't like giving these answers, you know, we take no pleasure. We'd say, you raise that money in a prohibited fashion, you're gonna have to give it back. I mean, you can ask for it later, but for now, you're gonna have to give that money back. Bottom line is, if you're part of a ballot question committee and you're blasting out invitations to your fundraiser, make sure there are no appointed public employees on there. Don't care about the mayor. The mayor, elected officials can solicit or receive. And we don't care about the corporate CEO either, especially for ballot questions, because corporations can give to ballot questions. We'll get into that a little bit more later. So public employees should not have fundraisers at their homes. So if I'm a candidate here in Franklin and someone who's a police officer in town says, hey, Jason, come on over. I can get 30 people here for a fundraiser. We'll do it right here in my house. You'll have to say, can't do it there because you're a public employee. So please don't have fundraisers in public employee homes. Public employees may not be treasurers of political committees. So many of you probably have political committees, people who may want to start a ballot question committee. You're going to form it, you need a treasurer. Please don't have a appointed public employee be that. Elected officials are exempt. So even though an elected official, like a state rep, may get a paycheck, they do get a paycheck, they would still be able to solicit or receive for ballot questions, for their campaigns, for others, for other people's campaigns. Any last questions on public employees at all? Yes.
How does this work for people appointed to boards and commissions that are unpaid?
The restriction's only in place for appointed employees who are compensated. Sometimes, though, we had a case, I tell you these things and we're not proud of, you know, we're not like, yeah, we got these people, but we have to resolve them in some way. We had a case in Central Mass where a person was a planning board member, received a $400 stipend per year, and our office determined they were a public employee. So there's something to look out for. Yes.
So I work for Massport, and I'm an elected official. Could I have a fundraiser for somebody?
I'd have to look in our legal database, but I would, my guess would be no.
That's what
that you would not be able to. I'm sure that we have already addressed the Massport question, and I'm 99% sure that we said that they were public employees and prohibited from soliciting and receiving. Yeah.
Authority, not a.
Even the Port Authority. Some of the things we look for, you know, are you part of the state pension system? So we would say, yeah, definitely a public employee. Yep. Any questions back here for public employees at all?
Over here.
So yes.
What about you see like certain firefighters or other public employees that run for Board of Selectmen or something like that? How are they doing?
It's extremely difficult. They must have a committee organized on the side. In case you didn't hear, he asked, what happens if a public employee wants to run for office, like school committee, and you're a firefighter? You have to have a committee on the side to do all the fundraising for you. So this rule still applies. Every 2 years, when the new state reps and new senators are sworn in, someone always files a bill that says, yeah, public employees cannot solicit or receive. Unless you're running for office, you can at least solicit and receive for yourself, but they've never passed the legislation. So it's still a restriction that's in place. So it's very difficult for them to do. I saw a few more hands, I think. Public employees, no? All right. Public buildings?
I was just wondering, on the previous slide, it looked like you had something that indicated there was a spousal exception.
Oh, yeah, we get this question sometimes. Hey, you know what? I work at a bank, and I'm really into politics. I want to have a fundraiser at my home. My wife's a school teacher. Why? You know, what, I can't have a fundraiser because she's a school teacher? She doesn't care about politics. We would say, okay, you can have a fundraiser at your home, and this always gets a few giggles, but your wife has to leave the house for the night. We just don't want there to be, I know it seems silly, but we just don't want there to be any misconception that, you know, perhaps she is fundraising herself. So public buildings, no soliciting or receiving, and buildings used for governmental purposes. You know, maybe after this meeting, Tom, you're walking downstairs, your neighbor sees you and says, hey, I can't make it to your fundraiser. Here's that check I was going to give you. Because we're in this public building, you'd have to say, sorry, can't take it, meet me in the parking lot. The law really is just the four walls of the government building. Public land, money can change hands on public land, but not in buildings used for governmental purposes. You know, this goes back to the day when a mayor might like march around City Hall and demand money from all the different department heads and things like that to protect public employees, but it's still on the books. How might it affect you today? Let's say you're running a ballot question committee and you're gonna blast out all your invitations to the fundraiser. Well, you're gonna mail them out by snail mail. And you send them the snail mail to the whole community, everyone who you know likes to give money to these sorts of things. And then the person running the ballot question committee says, you know what, we forgot to invite the police chief and the fire chief. If they show up, they'll show support for our override. You know, volunteer number two, can you send those? Volunteer number two thinks, police department, fire department. They send the invitations into those buildings. The Supreme Court about 100 years ago determined that is a solicitation in a government building and prohibited. So those are the sorts of things that you might come across if you're running a campaign. This slide here shows a government email address. So we would say that the campaign finance law prohibits even fundraising solicitations to government email addresses. So if you're running a ballot question campaign or you're running your own candidate campaigns, when you blast out emails to supporters, make sure there are no government email addresses in that group that you're sending out, please. Any last questions on public buildings? All right, public resources. This is sort of the bulk of what we're going to talk about here today. And it goes back to a court case from 78 when the city of Boston said, hey, we want to spend $1,000 to support a ballot question that's coming up. Well, some taxpayers in town who were against that ballot question took them to court and said, you can't spend money, our taxpayer money, on a ballot question that we don't agree with. The court agreed with the taxpayers and they came out with this decision. Anderson versus the City of Boston has said public resources may not be used for political campaign purposes. And from that decision and about a half a sentence in the campaign finance law, we administer these what we call Anderson cases, these ballot question public resource issues and rules. What are public resources? Phones, paper, vehicles, copiers, employee time, postage. Anything that's paid for by the taxpayer cannot be used for a campaign purpose. Let's go into more detail on that. So when you're talking about public resources, primarily we're looking at distribution, the use of public resources to distribute information. For example, you want to build a new school, and there's a school e-newsletter that goes out every month to all the parents. Superintendent puts it together with some other people, and it goes out to all the parents. Well, in this particular issue, it talks about the new school that's coming up, and make sure you vote yes on the upcoming override so we can have the new school for these kids. And you blast that out using the school email server. We'd say, no, that's a public resource being used for a campaign purpose. Or, we haven't seen these in a while. I think maybe our education's helped. But there was a time when we had a lot of these where you do want to build a new school, and the superintendent maybe is getting nervous, and so she sits down at her computer and she types out a flyer. You know, we need this new school for the children. We're going to lose accreditation. Please vote yes in the upcoming election. You know, secretary, can you make 1,000 copies? Can you also distribute those copies to the teachers so they can put them in the backpacks of the kids? That's the use of paper, ink, employee time for a campaign purpose. And then, of course, mailings. I mean, you wouldn't want to use the town postage meter to send out mailings to the whole town saying, please vote yes or please vote no in this upcoming ballot question. Those are just a few examples of where we see distribution and we say that's a violation of the campaign finance law. Also, the use of email. We do see this even more recently, where someone sits down at their town computer, they pull up their town email address account, and they send out emails that are political in nature. In this one, it's small. It's just the two different people. It's dealing with an election issue, and it's from an EDU account. We'd say, don't do that, please. Don't use public resources like email. We had a case once where a superintendent had a list of all the parents in the school district by email. And she sat down and she sent out an email that said, these three school committee members are good for schools. Please vote for them in the upcoming election, and blasted that out. We said that's a violation. That's a use of email and computers for a political purpose. Moving on, I've been hitting you with a lot of don't do this, don't do that. There are some things that public officials can do. And we're going to try and go through those right now. Public employees, public officials, they can make personal donations to ballot questions and to committees. In this case, it's a UMass Law School professor, $1,000 to a candidate. Good to go. They can do that. They can hold election signs. Vote yes, vote no, vote for John, vote for Susie. They can hold those on their own personal time. Public employees can do so. They can take a position on a ballot question. A lot of times, sometimes public employees, they might be in a conversation with somebody and they ask, hey, do you think we should pass this ballot question for a new school? Heck yeah, we should. You know, maybe they're at a dinner party. Yeah, we need to pass that thing. In fact, I'm gonna go on Twitter right now and say, please pass the ballot question coming up because the pipes are leaking and electricity is sparking everywhere. So, feel free, public employees can take a position. They just want to be careful, advocating for things while they're on the clock. Had this question once. They wanted to build a new school in this certain town, and parents, I have some kids, I pick them up at the bus sometimes, or at the school instead of taking the bus, and conversations happen between parents and teachers and whatnot, and they called up and said, hey, I heard a parent talking to a teacher at the parent pickup about the ballot question coming up. They were talking about how the school stinks and everybody, and we should vote yes, and that it should be passed. Conversations like that are not touched by the campaign finance law. Those sorts of things are fine where they can discuss. But, I'll get that in a second. We don't want to see, five of the teachers standing there with signs as parents come to pick up, with vote yes signs, that sort of thing. That's the kind of stuff where we'd say, that's campaigning, you're on the clock, let's watch out. We had a question? Yes?
I just wanted to emphasize the point you made earlier in this context. This is one of those areas where there's an overlap with the state ethics law, depending on your position and using that position to advocate. There's a set of rules separately from the Ethics Commission that govern that.
Very true. And it can be frustrating for public officials who are trying to, with their hands tied, trying to work on this ballot question. And when you call OCPF or you call ethics, we say, okay, here's our answer. Now call ethics. They're on the sixth floor and they're totally separate from us. It can get frustrating, but like Mark was saying, it's very important that you do call both agencies on these issues. A public employee can go on Facebook and say and support ballot questions or candidates. on their own time, their own personal Facebook. This one says, as many of you know, the vote for the new school is this Tuesday. Please vote yes. Trust me, we need it. You know, a teacher could post something like that, or a police officer. Public employees, public officials can attend a PTO meeting to discuss a ballot question on their own time. When it comes to, let's say you want to build a new police station, it's the police chief. If you want to build a new fire station, it's the fire chief. Schools, it's the superintendent. All of these different departments, if you want to raise money, if you want to have a ballot question committee, I mean, you've got to analyze it. You have to do your due diligence. That's going to take public time to analyze these questions. That's also not a part of the restrictions on the use of public resources for campaign purposes. So a superintendent, if they're going to build a new school, has every right to assign different employees to study the impact of the ballot question. What happens if it passes? What happens if it doesn't pass? And create a report for that. Let's say that the ballot question is coming up and the superintendent, you know, hears from the community that they want to have a meeting. He or she could have a meeting in the gym. People can show up. And while they're there at that meeting, they can take a copy of that analysis or other documents and hand them out to people at the meeting. That we wouldn't consider that distribution and the use of public resources to distribute campaign finance information, campaign information. Depending on the scope of your responsibility, public employees, officials can speak to the media. So if I'm a reporter, I could call up and say, hey, superintendent, they want to build a new school. You know, what are your thoughts on it? What's going on with that? They can have a conversation, that's fine. But a group of teachers during the school day, their scope of responsibility is teaching those kids. We wouldn't want to see a group of them come out for the cameras to talk about the new school during the school day. What about posting information on a school or town website? We don't consider that distribution. If I'm a resident here in Franklin and I know that a ballot question is coming up, they want to build a new school, my taxes might go up, but my kids are in the school, you know, maybe I do want a new school. I'm probably going to go to the town website or the school website and look for information on this ballot question. We say that you can post information on the website. For example, here it says, click here for information about the November 5th ballot question election. We have no problem with that. I could click there and the superintendent's analysis can be there. There could be some other information about budget impact and things like that. We're fine with that. We just don't want it to look like a campaign website, like this website. Vote yes on the November 5th override. The children need your help. We'd say that's going too far as posting goes.
So analysis, but no advocacy?
There can be some level of advocacy. For example, in the analysis, the superintendent or maybe the building committee that's studying this issue can say, for these reasons, we believe that it would be good for Franklin to pass this and build a new school, you know, to save accreditation. There's asbestos in the ceiling and kill the kids and that sort of thing. So there can be some level of that. If you ever want to post something to your website and you're like, I don't know, are we going too far? Send us an email and our attorneys there will take a look at it and say good to go or change this. And that way you at least have confirmation from someone at OCPF that it's okay. Call ethics too, please. Sorry. I'll get this question. They want to build a new police station. The police chief's been invited to go on community access TV. Can they do that? Yes, we'd say because it's the scope of the responsibility of that police chief that they would be able to, even during the workday, even though I think a police chief's on 24/7. Use of the facilities, equal access. So I said, hey, you cannot use public resources for campaign purposes. Some of you, though, who knows, maybe you've gone to the senior center as candidates, brought coffee and donuts, and you talked about the issues and asked the seniors for their votes. Is that illegal? We'd say no, as long as equal access is granted. If one candidate can go to the senior center with coffee and donuts and talk about the ballot question and say, you know, please vote yes, then all committees and candidates can do the same, as long as equal access is granted. I've gotten this call before. Hey, Jason, the boys football team is playing Friday night. I'm on the ballot running for school committee. I want to stand by the concession stand and hand out flyers asking for votes. And it has information about my campaign. Can I do that? It's city property. Yes, you can, so long as all candidates have the same access to that facility under the same terms and conditions. I did get this call as well. You see Bernie Sanders there giving a speech. The call came in. Jason, I want to file a complaint against Bernie Sanders. All right, what's going on? You can't use public resources for campaign purposes, right? That's right. He's giving a speech right now in the UMass gymnasium. That's a public resource, and you know, what are you gonna do to him? I say, okay, public resources can be used for a campaign speech. That's an actual photo of him at the UMass gymnasium. So long as, you know, Bernie Sanders can do it, Trump can do it, Clinton can do it, the rest of the crew can do it, as long as equal access is granted. So that would apply to like libraries and different things, and if anyone wants to ever have political political events in public buildings. Any questions now? I'm done with the public resources portion of it. Any questions at all about public resources and what can and can't be done? Yes, sir.
How are some politicians or that are in office, how do they get on TV to advocate for their office and get away with it, where they're showing their face, they're showing...
You mean a news program?
No, for example, Bill Galvin does it, for a good example. He shows an ad where he's showing the good that his office does, where I know that there have been other politicians that have not gotten away with it. I believe the old Secretary of State might have been...
I know where you're going with it. I know where you're going.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep. So public, our general rule is public resources cannot be used for campaign purposes. If someone feels that a public official is misusing his or her public funds to put their name out there for that sort of thing, we'll take a look at it. I believe the Ethics Commission recently addressed the direct question that you're talking about right now. So yeah, these sorts of things can be looked at, but I think it's on a case-by-case basis and whether or not it was a violation. Any other questions? Yes.
This may be a little bit of a niche case. We had an appointed sheriff here, appointed by Charlie Baker. It's obviously an elected role most of the time, but when it's appointed by the governor in that kind of situation, that's something where you could have them do a fundraising event or something like that if there's an appointed official in an elected role.
Once they're appointed to the elected position, we consider them elected, even though they never were elected. But they're an elected seat, so we consider them elected, and they can solicit or receive.
Again, on the fundraising question.
Yes.
What if somebody's retired, like Brian and Debbie, and they're in the state pension? Can they have a fundraiser then?
They can. Retired public employees can solicit or receive. You must be currently employed and compensated to have the restriction be in place.
Okay.
So ballot questions. On our end, as far as our auditors are concerned, this is about the easiest thing for us to audit because there are almost no restrictions when it comes to the fundraising rules with ballot question committees. So if Franklin were to ever have a ballot question where they need to address something, any number of ballot question committees can organize. What is a ballot question committee? It's when two or more people or entities pool their resources to support or oppose a ballot question. So, when they want, they're like, okay, there are two of us here, we're gonna spend $10,000 together to support this ballot question, we need to go form a ballot question committee. It's as simple as filing what's called an M101 form, that's an organizational form. They fill out that M101 form, take it down to the clerk's office, and voila, they're a ballot question committee. To bring in money, you do need to have a segregated bank account. So you wanna go to a bank and say, hey, we have this ballot question committee happening. We're going to be bringing in money. We want to be able to have an account to put it in. You know, they may not know what to do right away, but you know, they're going to go up to their higher ups and try and figure out how to put together this ballot question committee. If they have questions though further that they can't answer, they can call us. We have people who deal with banks all the time. So once the question is organized, they can begin to raise and spend money. What are the contribution rules? I think I already let the cat out of the bag, but there are no contribution limits. Everyone always hears about contribution limits. For the most part, it has to do with candidates. For example, all the candidates up here, $1,000 per year from an individual. That's the limit. Whether you're running in Franklin for a municipal office or you're Governor Baker, it's $1,000 per year. For ballot question committees, no limit. Remember, I believe it was last year, I'm losing track of my time here, 2018, there was a question about nurses and staffing, and it broke all the records. It was like $30 million was spent on that because there are no contribution limits. Entities can donate many millions of dollars to a ballot question committee. The M102, that's your campaign finance report. That's filed by all the candidates here in town. Same form is also filed by ballot question committees. It's due 8 days before the town election for the ballot question. and 30 days afterward. And it's going to show all the receipts, all the expenditures, in-kind contributions, if there are any. An in-kind contribution is something of value that's not money. So maybe there's a printing company in town, and they're like, you know what, we want to support this new school. We'll do all your printing for free. You would report that as an in-kind contribution, no limits. And then liabilities. So all of this is put into a campaign finance report, filed with the clerk downstairs. She's going to take it, scan it, put it on the website, and then the process of disclosure is over. At the 30-day after report, the question's been decided. We ask that on that report, the balance in the account is zero, and the committee can then dissolve at that point. If for some reason there are bills floating around, they stay open, that's fine. File the 30-day after, and then at some point shortly afterward, you can file the dissolution report. If there's money left over in a ballot question committee account, and you know what, this goes for candidates as well. Let's say you're done. You're like, I'm not running for office again, or unfortunately, maybe you lost at the election. You're like, you know what, I'm not gonna do politics anymore, I'm done. I still have $2,000 left in my account. That money, the campaign finance law requires that money go to one of four places. The state's general fund, which has never happened in the history of campaign finance. Don't ever give it to us. You can give it to like a city or a town, like a school or something. That happens from time to time. Charity or a scholarship fund. So you purge that money out to these things, and then you're done. You're wrapped up. Your committee's done. So resolving cases. I'm going to go to our website. It's ocpf.us.
You can give that money to a candidate?
You cannot transfer it to another candidate. You can't give it to the local party committee. It can only be to one of those four places.
Thank you, sir.
Yep, you're welcome. So this is the front
one. Yes. Question here for you. The in-kind contributions you were mentioning, you said there's no limit on those. How would that work? I imagine the situation has probably happened before where a donor says, hey, I'm going to go over to this print shop here and give them $3,000 to spend on ink and paper. Is that legal under OCPF's interpretation?
For a ballot question?
For a ballot question or for a candidate, or would that be considered?
Not for a candidate. For a ballot question, $3,000 would be fine, but the in-kind contribution would come from the individual, not the corporation, because the corporation is being paid for its services. For candidates, in-kinds are still limited at $1,000, and you can never take anything of value from a business. Corporations, LLCs, LLPs, partnerships. Let's say you're having your, I'll just address candidates real quick if you don't mind. You're having your big fundraiser coming up and you're with your group and you have all the entertainment decided, the decorations, everything's all decided, the date, the location. We go like, wait, we need the food. What are we gonna do about food? Well, your best friend from childhood is at the end of the table. He said, man, I own a sub shop. I'll provide free subs for everybody. It'll be on me. You have to say, okay, we'll take your subs, but we have to pay for them. We can't take anything of value from a business without paying for it. That's for candidates. There's a strict rule on corporate contributions to candidates. So this is the front page of our website, and I'm hoping it's not finicky. And I'm gonna go up here to the legal tab. Okay, it's being finicky. We're not gonna do that then. But I will, I don't know why it does that. We actually have a new mobile website coming out soon, I can't wait. We were talking about how to resolve cases, and then I'll be done. This is the campaign finance law is a criminal statute. At the end of the various sections, there's scary language about jail time and these massive fines and things. But I'll let you know right now, we're not going to court with anybody. It's happened a few times over many years, but for the most part, we try and resolve things right there in the office because people make mistakes. Most of our cases are resolved through what we call public resolution letters. That's a way for us to say, okay, hey, you know what, you're a school teacher, you sold 10 tickets to the fundraiser for the ballot question coming up. That was a mistake. The committee's given the money back. Everyone's been educated. Let's move on. Those are public resolution letters. That's how we resolve 99% of all of our cases. We might do a disposition agreement if the director of the agency feels that it's a lot of money that we're dealing with, or maybe there was some intent to deceive, something like that. We might do a disposition agreement. That's an actual settlement where there are signatures involved. And it's usually a big payment made. These are for big things, big cases. Then finally, our office can refer a case to the Attorney General's office for criminal charges. That happens very rarely, but that's really our only big hammer there, is where we can refer it to the Attorney General's office. If we had access to the website and that page, you'd see that we've done that four times, where we went to court and someone was actually sentenced for campaign finance violation. So it's very rare. The impression I want to leave tonight is that, hey, We're here to help you. You're going to move forward with your candidate campaigns, with your ballot question campaigns. Just know that you can always email us and get information straight from the horse's mouth. I'm done with the presentation. It went a little longer than expected, but any final questions at all? Anyone?
I just have one.
Okay.
With a ballot question, what are you allowed to do as far as providing information? Let's say you're trying to get the information to the community. Can you use public building to do that? Can your public officials be there to provide that information?
Yeah. So, I always use a superintendent example. Like, so if they want to build a new school.
I would always blame them too.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's been the best night yet for me.
Superintendent's here.
Administrator's not
one. Let's say you want to build a new school and she wants to have a public meeting. We'd say, sure, you can have a public meeting to educate the community there. In fact, there could even be maybe an announcement to the children that who, what, when, where, why sort of announcement. Please don't send any of those out until you get it vetted through our office and through ethics. But we would say that, a very short who, what, when, where, why sort of statement would be okay. And yeah, they could have a public meeting in a building like that. But as far as public officials go, and especially in Jamie's office and you know the town resources, you don't really want to use town resources to get the information out to the public. You're gonna have to depend on a ballot question committee to raise money and do that for you. All right, well, if there are no more questions, there's one more, okay.
Yeah, I don't wanna take up a lot of time, and I know this sounds trivial, but sometimes these little things come up here in Franklin. So I'm curious, so if I'm a teacher and I'm in a classroom at a high school and some children ask me questions about the override and a teacher happens to say, yes, tell your parents to vote yes, save my job, you know, what does that mean? Or they wear a t-shirt that just says yes. You know,
yeah.
Just wondering.
If we got that question, can we do that? I'm positive my general counsel would say teachers shouldn't say that. But if it actually happened and our director was looking at it and saying, hey, should we send this to the attorney general for possible criminal charges? They'd say, let's punt this thing. So there's the sort of the legality versus reality answer. And we'd say that, you know, don't do that. But certainly, if the issue came up in class, it could be a discussion. But the language you use where the teacher's like, yes, tell your parents to vote yes. We'd say, yeah, don't do that. At the very least, it could end up with as a complaint and then a newspaper story, even if OCPF does nothing. And you have that sort of negative headline in there about teachers campaigning on school time.
And my one last question is, you spoke a little bit about retirees. So if retired teachers were forming a committee to, vote for an override, for instance, and they happen to be getting health insurance through the town, is that considered compensation?
No, they would be able to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I said there were 250 PACs in Massachusetts. A lot of them are like firefighter PACs, police PACs, teacher PACs, and those are all run by retirees because they're the only ones who can solicit or receive, at least in part run by retirees. All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very much appreciated. Certainly very informative. If there are no other questions from the council or from the audience, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. Non-debatable. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.